So we know that Chazal say that tzaddikim memainam chavav aleihem kegufam. When it comes to tzaddikim, their money is as precious to them as their own life is. The source for this Chazal is that we find by Yaakov Avinu that Yaakov Avinu risked his life to go back over the bridge after his whole family had gone on one side of the bridge. He went alone back to where he came from because he forgot pachim kitanim. He forgot to take little jugs, little tchotchkes that he had forgotten. He went back to get them. Now, Yaakov Avinu was a very wealthy man. Yaakov Avinu did not need to take these little pachim kitanim. They were not that important to his lifestyle at all. He would have been able to survive without those pachim kitanim. Imagine if there was a multi-millionaire and he already is driving back from a vacation. He says, "Oh, I'm so stupid. I forgot my toothbrush in the hotel," and he would turn back his car and go get them. Go get a toothbrush for you're a multimillionaire. What are you going back for, a little toothbrush? Yaakov Avinu did really the exact same thing. Yaakov Avinu went. He went back on his own. He forgot pachim ketanim, little tchotchkes, and because of that, he ended up having to wrestle with the Sar Shel Esav, with the angel of Esav. But what we do see from this pasuk and from Chazal is that a tzaddik is very much machshiv his mammon, his money. And it's a little strange because you would expect for a regular person that's into trivial things or materialistic pursuits, maybe he would be a little bit obsessed with his chafetzim, with his objects. But we wouldn't expect a tzaddik, of all people, who really is more concerned with Torah, with mitzvahs, would he really go and put his money, his life on the line to go and find something of very little value? And the answer is that it's not about the chafetz, it's about the time that it took for him to earn the money to pay for that chafetz. There is a value of time. Time itself has great value. And so Yaakov Avinu was not obsessed about the pachim ketanim. He was obsessed with the time that he had to spend in order to earn the money to get the pachim ketanim. That time was so valuable to him that he felt that he needed to go back, because if he squanders those chafetzim, which took time, that's basically like squandering time itself. So he didn't look at money or at objects as chashuv in and of themselves, but he did look at them as being valuable because of the time that it took to earn those chafetzim. This is very reminiscent of something that the Chafetz Chaim used to say. The Chafetz Chaim used to say that people say that time is money. It's a very famous expression that people say, time is money. Come, we have to hurry, time is money. So he says, people say that time is money, but I say that money is time. I don't look at time as being money, like time is like, the money is the chashuv of a thing, so time is chashuv because it's valuable. It's like you can make more money the more time you have. No, it's the opposite. Money equals time. I look at money as being the amount of time that I spend on things. The Chafetz Chaim used to continue, and he said that for many people, they don't mind spending a lot of money, spending a lot of time to earn money, because they want the money. He says, for me, the time is more valuable than the money, so I'm not looking to waste my precious time to earn money. I have other more important things to do with my time. But the side that we're taking is that a person has to realize the value that time has. Time is a very valuable commodity. It's perhaps the most valuable commodity in the world. If a person has time, then he has life. and then he can enjoy whatever he has. He can enjoy his family, he can enjoy his material possessions, his ruchnias. But if a person does not have time because he's so busy day and night with earning money that he doesn't have time to really enjoy anything that he's doing with the money, then he really doesn't have anything at all. There's a story that's told that we know that there were two great people in the Chafetz Chaim's Kailal. Chafetz Chaim made a Kailal in his city of Radin for extremely chashuva avreichim. It was called the Kachim Kailal. And the reason why they called the Kachim Kailal is because it was a Kailal in which they taught and they learned with one another the laws of Kachim. Why did they learn the laws of Kachim? The answer is because the Chafetz Chaim was such a maimon. He believed so strongly that Mashiach is going to come. And he was afraid. He says, Mashiach is going to come. Is anyone in the world going to be able to paskin the shailas that come up when Mashiach comes? Imagine if right now Mashiach is here. And all types of shailas. Now the Rabbanim that we have are wonderful, right? They were able to paskin shailas about Kashrus, Isser v'Heter, Shabbos, Yontif, Tyrus HaMishpacha, Shailas, the things that they're familiar with, the things that they know, they're very comfortable passing, Baruch Hashem. That's an amazing thing. All of a sudden, Mashiach is going to come. There's going to be a whole new gamut of Shailas that perhaps nobody or very, very, very few people will even begin to know how to handle them about Toman Tyro. I touched this, I didn't go here, I did go here. Am I Tomei, am I Tar? You have to know about Aviya Vaisatoma, and Avatoma, Arisha, and Shani, all the things, all the Gemaras that you were avoiding. You know, these are things that come up L'maisa. Trumas and Maisris, and then finally, the big one is Kachim. All the halachas about Karbonis, about the Kaihanim, about chatzitza and about shchita and who's kosher to do the shchita, zrika and malika and all these myriad halachas about kachim, who in the world is going to be able to paskin all these new shailas? This is something that might not keep us up at night wondering about and worrying about, but the Chafetz Chaim was like the grandfather of Klal Yisrael. He was worried about everything like this. And he basically was very much concerned that there would be no paiskim to deal with all these shailas. So he made something very unusual. Today you have Brisk, and they're very into Hilchos Kachim, and they learn Kachim Masechtas, Baruch Hashem. But back in the day, there wasn't a Brisk. And so he made like a Brisker Kailal, if you will. And they learned Seder Kachim, and they learned it Halacha L'maisa. And these were the top gun avreichim in the world. The Chafetz Chaim paid them. I guess he paid them pretty well. And they came from far and wide to join this Kachim Kailal. Now, I don't know all the people that learned in the Kachim Kailal, but I do know two of them. And so do you. One of them was Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, the great Baranovich Rosh Yeshiva. And the other one was the great Panovich Arav. Now, Mendy is smiling because he's seen great Jewish wisdom clips, and so he knows exactly who these personalities are. But, and the rest of you might be smiling also, but I wish you would, show your faces, because it makes it a lot more fun. Now, no buyers, okay. Ah, Yoni's coming. Shkayach, who else? Any other brave people? Wow, okay. Good. Mayor, where are you? Okay. Anyway, so, Yehuda. So these are, two people that were part of the Kachim Kailal was Rabbi Chanan and the Panovich Arav. Now, Rabbi Chanan and the Panovich Arav learned b'chavrusa. There's a lot of very cute stories about this chavrusa shaft. I'll just tell you one very quick one. Rabbi Chanan had a baby boy. His wife had a baby boy. She lived not in Radin, she lived elsewhere. And but he got a telegram that Mazel Tov, he had a son. the bris is next Tuesday, and we'd like you to come home, to be at the bris. After all, it's your son. So he went to the Chafetz Chaim to ask Rishus to go and be at the bris. So the Chafetz Chaim looks at him, and he says, "I didn't know that you were a male." He says, "You're a male?" He says, "No, I'm not a male." He says, "So why do you need to be at the bris?" He says, "Well, I'm the Avi Ben, I'm the father of the baby." He says, "So they could do it without you. Get a male, and that's it. What do you don't need to be there. You need to be here. I'm paying you to be in the Kachrim Gaila. You got to learn Kachrim." And that's what happened. He just stayed, and he wasn't at his own son's bris. There's an addendum to this story, by the way, and that is that before he did that, the Chafetz Chaim said, "But get rishus from your wife. Make sure that she's okay with this," because he didn't want to cause shalom bayis. It's just that nobody speaks about that part of the story, but that's a major part of the story. Okay. But another story happened that as they were learning, when Rav Chanan and the Panovich Rebbe were learning, they needed a certain sefer. It wasn't like our Beis Medrash that's stocked with svarim. They were learning in an attic in the Radin Yeshiva, very few svarim, and they happened to know that this particular sefer that they were looking for, there's a very good chance that maybe the Chafetz Chaim has it, because the Chafetz Chaim brought it down at least in one place in his Shaar HaTzion on the bottom of the Mishnah Berurah, where he brings all the footnotes of the sources. He brings that sefer, so they assume that the Chafetz Chaim probably has the sefer, and they needed to look at it, to look at that sefer, to look something up. What they did was they went to the Chafetz Chaim's house, they knocked on his door, and the Chafetz Chaim answered his door. And he said, they said, "Rebbe, we need a certain sefer," whatever the sefer was. So he says, he looks at his svarim shrunk. It's like, you'd think it has like, you know, every kaddish guy today in the world has like a whole, and every bar mitzvah boy for that matter has a whole wall of svarim. Chafetz Chaim had a little svarim shrunk with maybe 30, 40 svarim in it. He looks at it and he krechts. He says, "I don't have that sefer." So they said, "But you brought it down in the Shaar HaTzion. What do you mean you don't have it?" So he said that, he says, "I borrowed it, like a lot of the svarim that I bring in the Mishnah Berurah, I don't have them, can't afford it, I borrowed it." So they were about to leave his apartment, and then they asked him, before we leave, "Just want to know, when the Chafetz Chaim just gave a krechts, when he like gave a groan by looking at the svarim shrunk, does that mean that you were upset that you don't have that sefer and many, many other svarim, that you have so few svarim? Is that why you looked at the svarim shrunk in that way?" So he says, "No." He says, "Whatever svarim the Rebbeinu Shalom gave me, I'm happy for. I don't wish I had a whole fully stocked library." "So why was the krechts? Why did you give a krechts?" He says, "Because I was looking at the svarim that I did have, and I realized that I spent a lot of money on those svarim. In those days, svarim were very, very rare. You couldn't get them like you can today. And they were very expensive because there was supply and demand. So it took a lot of money to buy every sefer." Chafetz Chaim said, "You know, a lot of those svarim I bought, and I don't know if I really need them. I don't know if I really use them enough to justify the money that I paid for them. And since I hold, my shita is that money is time, that every dollar that I earn basically is valuable because of the time that it took to earn it, so I'm worried that maybe I spend too much time to make that money to buy those svarim, and the money and the svarim that I'm not using are really like a waste of time. Forget about a waste of money. He wasn't concerned I wasted my money on that. I wasted all the time on buying those svarim and not using them enough to justify that expenditure of time." That's a very, very big chiddush. It shows us how important it is for a person to appreciate the greatest commodity that the Rebbeinu Shalom gives us, and that's the commodity of time. That's the gift of time. People that are on their deathbeds know this. When we're young and healthy, we don't look at it that way. We look at it, we have all the time in the world. So much time, I'm bored, I don't know what to do with all my time. When a person is about to die, and I've seen, Rahman al-Islam, people that are about to die, They get very desperate because they're gasping for more. They just want more time. All they want is to live more. And then at that point, they realize they wasted so much time. I had so many years. What did I do? I watched The Price is Right. I watched Yeshiva World 100 times. I listened to 10-10 Wins, Chazaring again and again. Give me 22 minutes, I'll give you the world. Over and the same sports, same stock market, same news, same headlines. Over and over again. I wasted hours, hundreds, maybe thousands, millions of hours of my life. I mamish threw them down the drain. And a person has to realize that time is very, very precious. And when we're young, we squander. We do, you know, we play video games the whole night, and we look at movies, and we read newspapers and books and magazines and doing all types of things just to pass the time. But when we get older and time is more scarce, we begin to realize that the value of time was something that I didn't take full advantage of. I didn't appreciate it. I spend too much time at work. Not enough time with my family. I spend too much time with trivial pursuits and not enough time learning. Not enough time davening. Not enough time doing chesed. And these are things that right now should haunt us. Because not make us neurotic, but it should be on our minds that maybe I could use my time a little better. I saw something amazing last week. I don't know how I stumbled across it. Wasn't learning a ktsais, I could tell you that much, but it was. But it's a very, very telling piece. I think everybody knows, who Warren Buffett is, correct? Warren Buffett is one of the wealthiest men in the world. He's 90 years old, he's an old man today, but he's known as like the greatest investor of all time. Greatest investor of all time. And he's not even into Gashmis, that's the irony. You know, you'd think a guy like that would have a million houses all over the world and swimming pools and yachts and could afford anything he wants, right? He's worth, I don't know, $50 billion, so he could get whatever. He doesn't want anything. He mamash lives like Hatznei Aleches. He wears old suits and he has an old car, and he doesn't live it all extravagantly. The reason why he makes so much money and why he's still in the game is because he just appreciates, he loves doing it. He really likes doing it. He doesn't need the money anymore. He never needed the money. I was telling stories to my kids about him the other day, how his wife, he's known to be very frugal. He's a very cheap guy. And his wife asked him like maybe 30, 40 years ago if she could have a new kitchen. You know, every woman in Flatbush, Borough Park, the Five Towns, gets 3 kitchens before they're married 10 years, right? It's not a big deal to put a kitchen in for a guy that's making a, you know, six-figure salary, apparently. So it should definitely not be a big deal for Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett makes more in 1 minute than I'll make in 20 lifetimes. So it shouldn't be, you know, a really big deal for him to put in a new kitchen. So his wife said, you know, I really would like a new kitchen. Why do I only have one sink? You know, I don't have one for Milchigs, one for Fleischigs. Like, she's making a whole big deal about it. So he said, how much does a kitchen cost? She said, I don't know, $80,000, I'll sign. $80,000 by the marble and the island and this. He says, no, I'm not doing it. $80,000, I'm not putting $80,000 into a kitchen. I'm not crazy. So she says, listen, Warren, every yuckel on our block has a new kitchen in their house. They're not Warren Buffett. One is a doctor, one's a plumber, one's a lawyer, one's a professor, one's a mashgiach and yeshiva. They all have new kitchens. Why can't we have a new kitchen? What's so bad about us having a new kitchen? They can afford $80,000 and you can't afford $80,000? Listen to what he said. It's a gainus. He said, I can afford $80,000. Of course I can. He says, but the difference is between me and the other people on the block, all your friends that have fancy new kitchens, he says, their husbands don't know what to do with $80,000. They might as well put it $80,000 into a kitchen. He says, I can take $80,000. I know exactly how to invest it. and in a few years, that $80,000 I can turn into $30 million. Without even blinking an eye, I know exactly where the industries are going. I can mamish, I buy IPOs, and I can invest in this and hedge it with gold and buy real estate and invest in Goldman Sachs. I could take that $80,000, and within a few years, I could parlay it into $30, $40, $50 million. So he says, I'll spend $80,000 on a kitchen. I'm not spending $30 million on a kitchen. It's a guyness, right? I don't know if she accepted it or not, but that was, you could see that it's true. There's truth to that, right? It makes sense. But you can start getting neurotic also. If you start thinking about everything like that, then you get crazy. Like you'll never buy anything. I'll spend $10 on a sandwich. I'm not spending $10,000 on a sandwich, so you'll never eat. So obviously you got to do things in life, but that's just giving you a mushel for Warren Buffett. Now, I saw an article about him, which is half of a fellow. It's not really about him, it's about his son. He has a couple of sons, and this son, his name is Peter Buffett. In 1977, when he turned 19, he received his inheritance, proceeds from the sale of his grandfather's farm, which his father converted into $90,000 worth of Berkshire Hathaway stock. Yichab? His son Yarshin from his grandfather, Warren Buffett's father, had a farm. They sold the farm, and instead of giving each kid the actual money that was coming to him, Birusha, Warren Buffett gave him that amount, but in his stock, meaning they all invested, all the kids got to put the $90,000 into Warren Buffett's company, which is called Berkshire Hathaway. Now, at the time, Berkshire Hathaway was a small investment company. It really wasn't that valuable at the time. But over the course of time, like today, each share is, I don't know, $100,000. It like went from being a few hundred dollars to being $100,000, maybe more. It's probably maybe closer to $500,000. I don't know. But it's a ton of money. This company is like the most successful company in human history, maybe. So he got this in 1977. He got $90,000 worth of Berkshire Hathaway stock. Now, it was understood that I should expect nothing more, said Peter. Meaning that was all you were going to use. It's known that Warren Buffett doesn't want to give any money over to his kids. He's giving it away to charity, whatever. Basically, this is what you have. You have $90,000 worth of stock, and now, la'adam, I have nothing to do with you. Basically, financially, I'll be your father, but financially, I'm not giving you any more money. You have $90,000 worth of now. He was a teenager in college at that time, and he was the youngest of the Buffett children, and the other children, they burned through their cash pretty quickly. He didn't want to do that. So he basically said to himself that he wanted to be a musician. That was his dream. This Peter Buffett wanted to be a musician. And he sold all of his shares of Berkshire Hathaway. He cashed in the $90,000, he put it in his bank account, and used that money to live. Meaning he rented an apartment wherever he lived. He paid people to teach him how to be a musician, teach him how to play musical instruments. He basically used the money, in his words, to buy the time it would take to figure out if I could actually make a go of it in music. So first he dropped out of Stanford University, and then he moved to San Francisco. He lived very frugally in a small studio apartment. He bought recording equipment with the money. He worked on perfecting his talents as a pianist, as a music producer. He actually ended up being pretty successful. Eventually, he basically, he won like an Emmy. He pretty much became successful in the field that he was shooting for. But he sold all that Berkshire Hathaway stock. Guess how much that stock would be worth today if he had not sold it? Okay? So that stock would have been worth today more than $200 million. $200 million. From in 1977, if he would have just done nothing, he would have sat on the couch and watched the Torah anytime all day, he would have been worth today $200 million. But he sold the stock. Now, if it was me, I would look for like a nice bridge, you know, and like wear a bathing suit or something and say Kaddish and then jump. I think that would be a consideration of mine. $200 million? Am I stupid to be a stupid musician? Like, what, am I crazy? Now, I don't know if he just said this, you know, because he doesn't want to do, you know, go to the local bridge. But basically, this is what he said. He says, I didn't make that choice of staying working for his father or keeping that money. And I don't regret it for a second, he said. I used my nest egg to buy something infinitely more valuable than money. I used it to buy time. I used it to buy time. And that time allowed me to find success in doing the work that I love. Now, that's something that I was very impressed by, that musig, because that's not a Gayish musig, that's a Yiddish musig, that's a Chavetz Chaim Dika musig. He doesn't regret spending that money because he bought with that money time. Time is much more valuable than money. Warren Buffett is someday going to be broke. How is he going to, what, the stock market is going to crash? And no, he's going to be broke the day that he dies, whenever that day should be Zeichet Arichas Yom Mishanim. But the day that he dies, he will be poor. So will Jeff Bezos, so will Bill Gates. They'll be broke because they have no time left. Money is worthless without time. And so time is only chashuv if you use it well. Money is not chasha. Money is only a hechatimtza to buy more time. If I work and now I'm able to have some money, now I'm able to learn, I'm able to give tzedakah, I'm able to raise my family, I'm able to do good things. But money in and of itself is not a goal to have. Money is only a hechatimtza to have time. And if you're using too much time on making money, more money than you really need, that's a big waste of your time. But these are musagim that only they have to be the Chavetz Chaim for, because we're living in a world that is so enamored by materialism and money that you have to just keep making more and more money. You can't even stop and think because you don't even know what you're making money what for, but you need more money and you have to spend more time at work and more time in the office and more time investing in stocks and bonds and this and that. But in terms of for what purpose, it's in order to, the ultimate purpose of money is to be able to live a life that you need to live. And for that you need time. And if you're spending too much time making money, then it's a real waste of your time. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, when his oldest son, Rabbi Binyamin, became bar mitzvah, he gave him a gift wrap present. And he said to him that, I am giving you the greatest gift that a person can ever get. And Rabbi Binyamin, excitedly, as a bar mitzvah boy, he told me the story himself. He was just nifter maybe 2 years ago. He ripped open the gift wrap paper and he said, and it was a watch. He says, that's a nice watch, but is this the great? He says, not the watch. He says, time. Time is the greatest gift that a person could ever have. I'm giving you the gift of time. And you have to use it right. You have to use it wisely. Don't squander it. And it's very, very important to understand that. When I was putting out my book, Great Jewish Treasures, he was one of the first addresses that I went to, Rabbi Binyamin, because I thought that maybe he would still actually have that watch so I could take a picture of it and put it in my book as a great, you know, musar graphic for that story. But he said that he lost it. It was like it was given to him in Europe, and, you know, he's now in America, and it was like a whole new world, and he misplaced, whatever. He doesn't have it anymore. Like, we don't have any of our bar mitzvah watches anymore, probably. He didn't have it, you know, 90 years later, he still didn't have it. So, But that's basically a very, very important yesod that you have to try to think about and to master and to really absorb when you're young. Because don't wait until you're old to chap how valuable time is, because then it's going to be too late. You're not going to have enough time to really do the things that you need to do at that time. You have to ration your time. You have to use it wisely. Make big plans for yourself. Say, I have this amount of time. I'll wake up early in the morning. You know, it's interesting. I was just telling somebody in my family, when you wake up early in the morning, you wake up, let's say, 5 o'clock, 5:30 in the morning, you have an hour and a half, 2 hours before davening, and it's the best time of the day. No one's up yet. Everybody's sleeping. The house is quiet. You're able to learn. You're able to be mavisedra. You're able to think. You're able to write. You're able to edit. You're able to do, you know, whatever you're doing. It's a great time, but it's like a secret that nobody knows about. You can extend the day by 2 hours if you wake up without. If you're going to sleep at 1 o'clock in the morning, it's going to be hard to wake up at a normal time. And if you're going to sleep late at night because you're actually accomplishing important stuff, then that's great. But if you're just like doing nothing the whole night, you're chilling and you're schmoozing on the phone with people and you're watching videos or you're playing video games the whole night, and that's ridiculous. That's such a waste of time. It's okay to chill a little bit, it's important, but to spend hours upon hours upon hours every day of doing things that are such a waste, it's chaval hazman. Go to sleep at a decent hour, wake up early in the morning and learn, daven, think, take a walk, exercise, but do things that will really improve the quality of your life and the quality of every single day. The Ger Rebbe used to say that the reason why a chassan gets a gold watch, today, I don't know if every chassan gets a gold watch, I didn't, but many chassanim used to get a gold watch, and he says the reason why chassanim got a gold watch was to teach them a lesson, and that is that what's the main thing, the gold or the money? Well, if you're using gold to make a watch, that shows that the ikkar is the watch, the ikkar is the time, and the gold is just a receptacle to hold time. That means that the chashuva thing is really the watch. The time is more chashuva than the gold. And you have to always remember that throughout your life. A chassan, when he gets married, has to think, wait a minute, what's the ikkar, what's the tavla? Is the gold the ikkar? Or is the time the ikkar? Well, if gold is encasing the face of the watch, that means that time is the main thing in life. And the gold is just a tuffle to time. Time is the most valuable resource. But a person has to really fight like an upstream battle to understand this, because the whole world doesn't chap this. The whole world thinks that money, 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 especially in America, everything is about money. Everything is about how much he's making every year, what he's what he's driving, what he's buying, where he's moving, what he's investing in, what clothing he's wearing, what type of belt is that, what type of tie is that. Everyone's obsessed with materialism in our world, unfortunately. And it's something that no one's caring about time. Time is bottle. The main thing is money. But the smart people in life realize that it's the opposite. Money is so unimportant. It's important to have. You need money in order to feed your family, etc. But I'm talking about, beyond what you need to support your family and live in a comfortable environment. Beyond that, don't make the mistake of running after too much money at the cost of too much time. Because tzaddikim, chavav aleim emainam yosim migufam, their money is very valuable, but not in and of itself. It's only valuable because they spend so much time earning it. And the more time that you can keep for yourself and learn and daven and spend with your family and do good things, that's really the greatest investment that a person could ever make. Okay, everybody, say have a good night. Thank you for listening.